Welcome to Rants and Reason. I am Chuck.
I am Karen.
I was a Democrat.
And I was a Republican.
I'm still a liberal.
And I'm still a conservative, but other than that, we're not really sure what we are. But we do know this. As Abraham Lincoln reminds us, we are not enemies. We are friends.
We are friends, and yeah. You had a good Hanukkah?
I did, and you had a good Christmas?
I had a very good Christmas. The good. Boys are all in town, and they are harassing me endlessly.
I'm sure you're having a wonderful time with that. I hope that all of our listeners had a wonderful holiday, whatever you celebrate.
Yes, we do hope you did. And before the new, this is our last episode before the new year.
Mm-hmm.
So we thought we would just kind of reflect on it.
Right. That's what you like to do for New Year's, right? You like to just kind of reflect on the past year. And this was our first year of podcasting. It'll be our first official year at the end of February, right? Isn't that about right?
It absolutely will be.
Well, so since this is going to be our first New Year's Eve episode, and we are coming up on the year, we wanted to take a minute and talk about all of our favorite episodes and encourage you to listen to them if you haven't already. So we're going to kind of interview each other. This should be interesting. So Chuck, what was your most fun episode to record?
I think my most fun episode was the political scandals episode. I think that's where we kind of learned that, as you like to say, there's nothing new under the sun.
That's right.
I think we've become, I don't know, a little bit panicked by our current leader. And I think sometimes we need to be reminded that some of these things, not all of them, certainly not all of them, but some of these things we have seen before. So they're nothing to get yourself so lathered up over.
Right. And in one particular president's case, we definitely have seen it before.
Yes, we have. Are you talking about Johnson?
I am. I am talking about President Johnson. Okay, so my favorite one, the one that I think was the most fun to record, was the one that Ben sent us that was about tort law and how many frivolous cases there are and things like that. That was a really fun meme to break apart. You did a really great job. I think I was sick during that week, and you did that. You wrote that episode by yourself, and as we tried to read it, but something about like the hot coffee falling on this woman's lap just had us cracking up, and we laughed so hard we could barely get it. We could barely get the episode recorded. Do you remember that?
We had to cut a lot out of that one.
It's mostly just us laughing and making highly inappropriate jokes, but I think that was the one I had the most fun with for sure.
But I also think it drove home an important point that, and this is a problem I have with tort reform. Corporations, you can't put them in jail. Mm-hmm. The only way you can punish a corporation is to sue them. The only way you can punish them is to hit them in the pocketbook.
Right.
And when you start saying, well, we want tort reform, you might as well just say, you know what, we also want radical sentencing reform. The maximum you can get is 3 years. It doesn't matter how many people you murder. That's what tort reform is to me. Mm-hmm. It gives basically corporations that are already, in my opinion, deregulated as far as you can deregulate them. And basically they break the law as a matter of course. It's the only recourse you have. And it's the one thing that we have as citizens is recourse to the law. And when you want to limit that, it's as dangerous as limiting free speech. That's my opinion.
Really, you just got all serious on me, and I was trying to be funny, and so now I'm trying to wrap my mind around that. I think you're absolutely right. I do. It's good stuff.
Tell me, now you certainly, Karen, did all the heavy lifting. I want to thank you for that. When it comes to research, really, I would put you up against anybody on any podcast.
Well, thank you.
I will absolutely say that.
Thank you.
What was your favorite episode to research?
Probably the War on Drugs series and the last episode of the immigration series, or the second to last episode, the one about the lies that are told in the immigration narrative. I also found that breaking apart the Flint water meme that was going around saying, you know, and I've seen this over and over again in different forms. There's a meme that goes around that says so-and-so are doing this, but children in Flint still don't have clean water. Well, actually, the pipes have been fixed. I mean, there were a lot of things done, and we went into great detail showing how that meme in all of its different forms was incorrect. And that was really fun when I'm able to find really solid research that I can stand on confidently, that that's something I really enjoy. So those are the ones that I think I enjoyed researching the most.
I think mine was the immigrants stealing our benefits. I think that was a meme Monday.
Mm-hmm.
And I think also fear and how they use it.
Right.
Because that's something, you know that I read a lot of Chomsky, and mm-hmm. that's something that he is big on. And I think it's just important for people to know that the most powerful thing that drives us is our fear. And politicians know that, and they play on it.
Right.
So stop and think once in a while when you hear what a politician is saying. Are they using your fear against you?
Right.
Are they manipulating you to get you to do what they want to do based on fear?
Yes. Yeah, definitely. It could be because fear causes action. And with the immigration or the immigrants are stealing our benefits, or are they, episode, that one you found some really surprising research, right? That a lot, where a lot of people were getting their numbers, was completely biased.
Well, and that's where you found actually that immigration center. What was it? Center for Immigration Reform?
Center for Immigration Studies, I believe.
Yeah. I mean, they're all over Google, and they are a very anti-immigration group. Mm-hmm.
But they present their research in a very, as though it looks unbiased, but it's not.
And they also pay a lot of money to be placed first on Google searches.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. The first, if you do a Google search on immigration, the first 5-10 pages are going to come from them, and you're going to have wrong information.
Well, what do you think? I know that you complained about a lot of my research. I would send you tons and tons and tons of research, and you would just be like, no more, I'm done. And I knew you were no longer reading it anymore. What do you think was the most challenging episode when it came to research and putting all the information together?
Probably the drug series. And again, what people need to understand is you don't make me do a lot of research. You just make me read a lot of stuff.
Well, I want you to fact check me.
Yeah, right. I give you my opinion on it, and then you tell me my opinion's wrong.
That's not true.
But no, I think that the hardest one for me was the drug court episode. Mm-hmm. All the series, you know how I was during a series. After we got, by part two, I was done with pretty much every series.
Right. When we got through the history that had some, you know, always quirky, interesting things to it, when we got into policy, you got kind of bored pretty fast. So.
Yeah. And I know that you're going to tell me one of your favorites, and that was a particularly difficult one for me too. So tell me your most challenging one.
One of my most challenging episodes, or just series, was the Religious Liberty series. That one was so difficult because there was just no definite anything. I mean, it was just such a twisty path to get to where we are today. And it's so confusing. That was just really, really hard. And everything was very convoluted. The whole thing was difficult to research, and it was really difficult to explain what we discovered in the research in like a way that listeners would find interesting or compelling. And another challenge that I had, and you had to sort of take over the Meme Mondays, because I would get lost. We were trying to craft 10-15 minute episodes, and I would spend like 6 or 7 hours a day in research for a Meme Monday. And I would just, because I just wanted to fact check. I wanted to find facts, 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 facts. And where did these facts come from? And where did these facts come from? And where did they get their information? And I just got lost in it. And so finally you were like, enough. And had to kind of take that from you a little bit.
And the point of the Meme Mondays so often was to debunk them.
Mm-hmm.
And I would find to me, two sources is good enough. And if one happens to be a friend's Facebook page, that's good enough for me.
Good. I just was like, you know, it's one of those things where if Snopes debunks things, I want to know where Snopes gets it. You know, like I want to know I want to get all the way back to the original source if I possibly can. And sometimes when we were putting together a short episode, that was very, very challenging to do. And also one of the episodes that was the most challenging, I agree with you, it was in the War on Drugs series, and it was the drug court episode, because it kind of hit close to home. And I talked about some personal experiences that I have regarding that. And that's always hard. It's always hard to talk about your children or things that were difficult. And so that was hard, but I feel like it was important, and it's important for people to see hear about the faces of the situations and the issues that we all talk about so in such a cavalier manner.
Well, and I get nervous anytime we talk about the courts, because I've really never had anything good happen to me in court, and most of that has been my own doing.
Right. But I was about to say, isn't that kind of your own fault?
But most of the time I've been in trouble in court, it's my own fault. I can never really point to a time where I say, you know, no, I didn't have that coming.
Yeah.
Now, when you were researching all this stuff, what surprised you the most?
Well, the War on Drugs had a lot of information that surprised me. I found that there was a lot of skewed information in the sentencing project, which made me really sad, because that was a resource that I used a lot. And I found that a lot of what people believe about simple marijuana possession, creating a lot of the racial disparity in criminal justice, is not actually a thing. It's found much more at the local levels than it is federal levels. So that was really surprising to me. Also, the border apprehension details, just the minuscule amount of MS-13 that actually shows up at the border is so tiny, and other gang members. And when we tore apart those stats, that really surprised me.
Can I jump back to the War on Drugs for a minute? Because I think this is an important distinction to make. The sentencing project, the facts that they give you, the stats that they give you, are technically correct.
Right.
It's the way in which they present those facts.
Yes.
That someone is sitting in jail awaiting bond for a possible possession, possible distribution charge, they count them all. They just take a snapshot on a certain day. And the majority of these people are in jail awaiting disposition. Doesn't mean they're going to jail. It doesn't mean they're going to prison. It doesn't even mean they're going to pay a ticket.
Right.
It just means they haven't paid their bond, or you get arrested and you wait for an arraignment. And sometimes that's 2 days away. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have money to pay bond, sometimes you can sit in jail for 30 days and at an arraignment, they just drop the charges and you go home. But it happens quite often. And the sentencing project counts all those people as in jail. And technically they are in jail, but they count them, they present them as if they're in prison for that.
There was just some framing techniques that were not as accurate as when you actually go to the Bureau of Prisons and look at the numbers, or you look at it by district and break it down. It's just a little bit different. And we're not saying that there isn't a huge racial disparity, but a lot of it started with the crime bill that was passed by Democrats. They didn't realize that would happen, but that was when they started looking at the weight of drugs. I mean, there was just a whole lot in that series that I didn't know that surprised me.
Right. And I think the thing that we learned, and Taylor and I were talking about this weekend, the thing we learned is basically every drug law we have or have ever created has been aimed at one ethnic group.
Mm-hmm.
You know, from the Chinese to the Mexicans with marijuana.
Right.
The black population with crack.
Right. When we looked at the War on Drugs, when we looked at the history of the War on Drugs, that was the first episode that we did for that. And that's exactly what we learned, is just how it was steeped in racial discrimination and discomfort in different races.
And I know that you really, really, we really have fun with the election fraud one.
Yeah. Well, it was surprising.
Because you got to tell me I was wrong.
I was very surprised by the voter ID laws, the exceptions to the voter ID laws, because if it was just very surprising, you would read a bunch of stories in very reputable news sources that didn't really give all the information. And it was very disheartening, but it was also very surprising that when you actually look at the state laws, now, you know, like we mentioned in the episode, I'm sure that at a local level, people who are working at polls may not abide by those rules, but things just aren't nearly as restrictive as they've been made out to be. And that was very surprising.
Well, it was quite surprising. And I think the one that surprised me the most was Guns in America Part 3, What We Never Say.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that sticks with me even today. And what we learned from that is there's literally an epidemic of suicide of white males over 50. And this year, you're going to have more than 60% of gun deaths are going to be suicides.
Mm-hmm.
So there's so little you can do. If we take away the AR-15s, mm-hmm. you know, you're probably not going to have, you're still going to have school shootings. They're going to be done with different guns and maybe not as deadly, but they're really not going to make much of an impact.
Right.
If you take away the high capacity magazines, they're only going to have an impact to a certain point right. because our problem with guns are people shooting themselves, and it only takes one bullet for
right,
that.
Right, and it's impulsivity. It's an impulsivity issue. We went into so many different parts of that. Yeah, and, you know, flagging is such an important thing to look at. You know, flagging laws. That's really one of the only, that and waiting times are the only ways to mitigate some of that. But the research that we went through there was pretty sobering. For sure.
But I thought we did our best to present that in a very non-biased way.
Right.
And just present facts.
Right. And let people kind of come to their own conclusions. Because it's really, you know, we don't have any solutions. All we can do is just, you know, talk about the problems and just kind of bring up the things that we weren't hearing that were factors.
Well, and that the narrative that you keep hearing is not necessarily true. Whether you want AR-15s or not, the war on AR-15s is not going to solve the problem. It's not even going to make a dent in it. And it was a very discouraging thing for me because I kind of went in with these preconceived notions that there were A, B, and C that you could do. And that was really going to not be the silver bullet, but it was going to make a huge dent in this. And then in reading all the research and all the statistics, I found out that it's such a difficult problem that I don't even know what the answers are.
Right. And I really think that that's something that with the CDC starting to allow research on gun violence, suicide is a big part of that. When I was looking at the research that is being brought up, I mean, I think that when those reports come out, both sides of the gun debate are going to be rather disappointed because neither side is going to get the statistics that they want to see to propel their ideas forward.
Right. Right.
Yeah. That's what we found with that. So I know when we did the series episodes, it kind of drove you a little crazy. Those were not your favorite.
They were not my favorite.
Did you have a favorite of the series?
Actually, I would say the gun series was my favorite because I think it's funny because I own so many guns. You know that I target shoot constantly. I, you know, have shot in competitions before, so I'm very familiar with guns. And so much that I learned about guns, and that surprised me. And that was my favorite because I came away armed with far more facts. Mm-hmm. To have a real discussion about gun control, responsible gun ownership, mm-hmm. and what we can and can't do, you know, not based on the Constitution, but not what we can and can't do, what's going to be effective and what's not going to be
right.
effective.
Efficiency. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What about you? What was your favorite?
Mine was the war on drugs. And for a kind of a different reason, I feel like that series kind of cemented the format that we used from that point forward, it of starting with history, using the history to show how we got the policy and how the policies changed into the issues that we discuss today. I think that that's really where that the formula that we started using for every series kind of came into shape. So that was my favorite because it made things way easier for me when we figured out a process.
Now, when we did all of these episodes, do you have episodes that you're the most proud of?
Yeah, but I'm proud of different ones for different reasons. So I think that the third episode on guns, the things we never talk about, was really important. That was just something that not a lot of people were saying, and I think we added a really important element to the discussion. I felt like the meme Mondays that really broke down just completely wrong memes were also very important because they helped our listeners fight with some facts. And, you know, people were getting so frustrated with all the memes that they were seeing. And it was like, it would just cause all these arguments. But when you just overloaded people with facts, they would run away. And I felt like we were actually doing something to kind of help the internet. We were fighting the good fight with that. So I really did like that. I was really proud of the conspiracy theory one because we were coming up on the holidays and it gave some practical advice to help deal with something that's actually really difficult right now. When you have a family member that's wrapped up in a conspiracy theory, trying to figure out ways to maintain a relationship with those people despite where they're at is a really, really difficult thing. And I feel like we gave some practical advice that people could implement. And I'm really proud of that. If it helped maintain a relationship, you know, if a family member, to keep someone in your life that you love, then I'm really, really proud of that. I feel like the Christmas episode that we did, Marley's Chains, I felt like that one was really important. And that one came straight from my heart. I mean, that's just exactly, if I could just tell the world, you know, messages that were just in my heart, that was it. So I was very, very proud of that one.
I really liked the last one we did, the Marley's one. And I cannot think of the title to save my life. I'm sure you will. The one we did on confirmation bias. Mm-hmm. That one was really, and you love to get into how the brain works. Mm-hmm. And I think some of those, the confirmation bias, the conspiracy theory, mm-hmm. how they're not necessarily opinions, but they're basically how our brain is hardwired.
Well, and that we get dopamine, we get rewards out of feeling justified or feeling like victims, those types of things. And so understanding that about people, that it's both a biological and a social thing, kind of allows you to give them a little bit more grace and learn more adaptive behavior than just thinking, oh, these people are crazy. I don't want to deal with this person.
Yeah. So I think those were some of my favorites because they kind of helped me to understand people right. on the fringes. Right.
So you were kind of proud of those. Well, I think I'm also, in a different way, I'm really proud of like the SCOTUS history, the history of Supreme Court confirmations and midterm melees. And also this, Marley's Chains was like this too. I felt like those were way more succinct and expressed what we wanted to say in a very clear manner. Because believe it or not, both you and I are prone to rabbit trailing. So would you agree with that, Chuck?
I think you tend to do that more than me, but yeah, go ahead.
Do you?
I do feel like you tend to get off track a little bit, but well, I think I've done a good job of reining you in.
I appreciate that. I'm so glad to have a coworker that's so good at that when I start going off the trail. But those particular episodes, I think we really got in a groove of following our script but we learned so much in those episodes and we packed a lot of information in a clear way. And so I'm really proud of those because those just came together very, very well.
Yeah, I would. Well, I would say those two, and I the one confirmation bias that really stuck with me because what it did was challenged me all the time to think about what opinions I've held my entire life.
Right.
And then to re-examine them in a different way.
So you're proud of that one because it you feel like it really could have made a difference for people.
Made a difference for me. I don't particularly care about other people. You know, I'm like that. You care about other people. I really don't. But it did make a difference for me. And it the people I talk to about these things the most typically are you and my three boys. And I have learned to keep a much more open mind to realizing that I've held the same beliefs for a long, long time and not giving up those core beliefs, but some of the issues, taking a different look at them from a different angle. So I think those are the episodes I'm very proud of and very happy that we did.
Good. Well, what episodes do you think were the most formative to how the show evolved? Which ones do you think really kind of turned it into what it is now?
Well, I think you have to go back to the beginning, and I think you get to the cable news episode that we did, how basically cable news makes you dumber. Cable news is making a fortune. Donald Trump is cable news' best friend.
Right. And we're talking more corporation of cable news than we are journalism itself.
Right. And the way we word, the way that we are just manipulated by speech. And I told you, I just mentioned before, I read a lot of Chomsky. By trade, he is a linguist. And that really, to me, he's kind of that kind of tied into a lot of things I've read of his. And how we are manipulated just by speech, and how, you know, if you look today, what is going on? You and I were talking about this. This is not going to be a Trump bashing thing, but we were talking about the thing that no matter what you say about Trump, the one thing that he excels at, and we have had some brilliant speakers as president, Obama, Clinton. I mean, you have to go back to Lincoln almost to Reagan was great. Nobody can work a rally like Trump can.
Right. He knows how to use rally speak.
And he knows how to use words when he's in a rally. Now, when he's in an interview, when he's tweeting, not so much.
He does know a lot of words because he has a very good brain.
He has a big brain, a very good brain.
A very good brain.
But, I mean, you have to admit, if there's one thing the guy knows,
He knows how to work the media,
and how to work rallies and how to give speeches to basically to inspire fear to me. Right. As I heard someone say, to work on our darker angels. That's my opinion, but he's very, very effective.
He knows how to work. He knows how to verbalize hard power.
Yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what do you think was a formative shows that we did?
I think the very first Meme Monday where we broke down an Obama meme, that one, I think that kind of established the podcast as a truth-seeking and fact-based podcast rather than just a commentary-driven one. And I think that kind of started to set us apart. So I think that was really formative to the evolution of the show. I think the war on drugs established the process that the show eventually adopted. And I mean, we needed to do that. Do you remember how hellacious it was just trying to figure out how to structure the issues before we began with history? I mean, do you remember how we would try to figure out a starting point and kind of argue about it for days before we would figure it out?
We would have 10 pages of facts and research
and not know how to frame it.
And again, you know, I will credit you there because I think that I'm a good writer. I think I can write well enough. I think I can make a point well enough. But one of the things that we found our strength is if I give you, you're great at the research, but if I give you tons of information, and I've done this before, you know, people don't see our scripts, but I will have 8 pages of information that I give to Karen and say, this is really good stuff, but I don't know how to put it together, you know, and mm-hmm. I think that we really found that your strength is putting that stuff together and tying it all together.
Right. And you're so good at taking what's written and turning it into something very succinct. And so, I mean, it started working out so well when you would do the Meme Mondays and I would do the longer series episodes. And, but it was just, at first we were so overwhelmed by the process. And so I think that the war on drugs really cemented how we were going to do that from that point forward. And it made the longer, more drawn out episodes a lot easier to put together. And I think, Chuck Walters, that you sell yourself very, very short. I couldn't do this without you. And that's for sure.
Well, I think that's kind of funny because when I first planted this idea in your head, you did not believe you could do it. You really didn't have a whole lot of confidence that you could do this.
I still don't think I could do it by myself. The other one.
I had done the other podcast and I said, you know, it's not that hard. Well, mm-hmm. because I'd never done research for a podcast, I didn't realize how hard it was.
Right.
So you've come quite a distance in that time.
It's been a learning process for both of us, hasn't it? Yeah. So
now, if you had to pick three mm-hmm. episodes that you were going to say are your favorite episodes, what would you say?
Okay.
Which three would you pick?
What I'm basically
telling you now is you have 3 children. Tell me your 2 favorite.
Well, okay. I'm going to tell you my 3 favorite, my top 3, and then like my ultimate favorite. Okay. So probably my top 3 is the McCain episode.
Yeah.
I felt like that was written in a very sincere and authentic way and was our send off to a very important man. I love the way we word. Although I would update it now to kind of add some more to it, but I felt like that was a really strong episode. And oddly enough, the Art of the Deal episode, when we first did it, it was just something we did very, very, we just like, hey, let's do this and put it together really quickly. But I feel like I keep referring to it in our conversations when we're putting scripts together. I feel like the Art of the Deal actually really, really explains the mindset of the president and how his business ideas are so opposite than government. I feel like that particular episode really pinpointed why we have such a problem with him instead of just gratuitously complaining about him because, you know, he's who he is, you know, instead of just complaining about that, I feel like going into what he wrote in The Art of the Deal and comparing it to how government works really explains why his mindset is so dangerous. So if you skip that episode, I would encourage you to check it out and tell us what you think, because that episode really does, it made me understand things that like, this is the way his mind works. And this is why we're going to have some issues here.
Well, and I think it kind of explains some of the actions like Syria, mm-hmm. you know, just tweeting one day without telling Mattis anybody else.
Right.
We're pulling troops out of Syria. Yeah. And the tariffs. Yeah. And because he has this mentality in business, you can bluff.
Mm-hmm. And it just doesn't work.
It doesn't work in government because in foreign affairs, because everybody knows the cards you're holding.
Right.
You know,
and the repercussions are so much bigger.
Right.
And you're dealing with other people's money and other people's lives. And it just takes on a different level. So doing that comparison of how it would play out in government versus how it would play out in business, I feel like that was, we, we didn't even realize how important it was. And it actually, I think, is something that we're seeing play out more and more and more the longer that this goes on. And my ultimate favorite is Marley's Chains. That was my favorite. So,
and you did get to watch A Wonderful Life.
I did. It was wonderful. So
I would.
What about you?
I would say probably The Curse of Cable. I think that was kind of an important one to get people to be aware. At least you're not going to stop watching cable news, but be aware of what you're doing. I mentioned The Way We Were. I think that that was a very important one too. And Immigration, The Lies.
Which was a meme Monday.
It was a meme Monday. And it tears down the narrative that we keep getting sold from one side. That's just not true. You know, there's just so many things surrounding immigration. Immigration is not a simple problem.
Right.
You know, and it comes down to resources. It comes down to morality. It comes down to ethics, what you believe, you know, is right in your heart, what you, you know, it's not an easy, there are no easy answers.
Right.
But again, we're told by politicians and really on both sides, you know, you take the left and I'm not going with the left wants open borders. The left doesn't want open borders for the most part. But we have to understand that, you know, all immigration, mass immigration is about lack of resources typically or escaping horrific things. And that's happening all over the world. So do we take in everyone? At what point do we say no?
Right. It's a nuanced.
Right. There's no easy answers. And we keep getting sold these easy answers by politicians. Right.
The fact of the matter is all of us are going to be somewhat unhappy with every policy. It's one of those things where it's like, okay, is this going to be somewhat effective and efficient with the least amount of damage? All right, then no one's going to be 100% happy with any policy. If they are, then it's just going to have reactive change later.
Yeah, and I'm going to give an honorable mention to our interview with Ed Rushman.
I agree wholeheartedly, yes.
Ed ran as an independent candidate in California that we would like to see more people run as independents.
And
I think there was this kind of the beauty of Ed was he was very honest. He was very forthright. And I think we all knew in the district that he was in, he stood very little chance.
He had an uphill climb.
He just maintained
hope no matter what.
He just didn't care. He didn't care that this was almost an impossible. The man who's in there is so entrenched, you know, and he's been entrenched forever. And he has so much money.
Right.
And Ed was not taking money and he was knocking on doors trying to get voters, one voter at a time. Mm-hmm. And just because he didn't get elected does not mean that he did not win.
Right. I believe he's trying to run again too. I don't know. We'll have to hear more from Ed. But he did a wonderful job in really articulating his passion for the changes he would like to see in politics. And he just had a raw, authentic desire to serve his community. I mean, he was the epitome of what, when someone says a public servant, he wanted to be a public servant.
Right. And he was a guy who had been successful in his endeavors in his entire life. Mm-hmm. He didn't need a job. He wasn't trying to get some kind of golden pension. He didn't really care about power. He was hoping to affect change.
Mm-hmm.
And that he's an admirable guy. And he still listens. And if you hear this, Ed, we really appreciate you coming on the show.
We do. And it was really a joy to interview you. All right. So, Chuck, are there any episodes that you would do over or not do at all?
I wouldn't say there are episodes I wish we hadn't done. And I think you know that the series episodes, I just started to drag toward the end.
They're so important, though.
They are, and I, you know, basically followed your lead. But you know, by the halfway through the second episode of any series, I was doing almost no research. I was just kind of
this is true.
Talking to you while you were doing it. And I was after, after you had told me the story, told me the framework, told me the facts, I had kind of learned it and I was kind of done with it. And I don't have that kind of brain to put three series together in a cohesive manner that's going to make sense. So they were very difficult for me, but I'm glad we did them all. I'm glad I had you here to keep pushing. But as for what we would redo or do over, basically every episode we do after I listen to it,
there is something
I think, you know, we could have added this, we could have added that, but we wrap them up, we edit them, we put them out. And I always said to you, however many listeners we have, it doesn't, that's never been our thing, because we knew, I told you this going in, we were not going to be a huge podcast because our podcast, and my son said this to me, and I was actually pretty proud of it. It's not an easy podcast. It's not necessarily an entertaining podcast. It's almost like taking sometimes an online class. And he said, when I listen to him, to when I'm not distracted, when I can really pay attention, because Joe Rogan is a great podcast. I listen to him. He said, but it's not a Joe Rogan podcast where you can take a phone call and come back 15 minutes later and it doesn't matter what you missed. You know, these things, you have to listen to the whole thing. So they're hard. And
we ask people to challenge their beliefs,
right?
You know, to evaluate themselves, and that's never a fun thing to do. So,
now what about you? Are there any wish we would not have covered or done?
I think the one I wish we would have waited a bit on the Kavanaugh episode. I still stand by what we said policy wise, but his rebuttal performance at the investigation hearing, it really gave me a different perspective of him. And if we had it to do over again, I wouldn't have done that episode if I'd been able to see the future. You know, I feel like it just wouldn't have been, there wouldn't have been any purpose for it.
Well, I think that, yeah, I wish we would have waited for that, because the point that I would have made about the Kavanaugh thing was that congressional hearing, that was a job interview.
Right.
And he failed miserably. Whether you believe the woman was lying, she may have been lying. She may have been paid by Democrats. Now, I don't believe any of that's true.
That's
right?
Not what you're saying. But
even if she were,
irrelevant.
He failed that interview so miserably. I mean, I just want you to think of the way he comported himself and think about sitting on the other side of a desk and asking a company to hire you and literally getting red in the face, talking about that angry, talking about your former employer. No one would hire you. They would say you don't have the temperament or disposition that we want here. And I, you know, whether that was what Ms. Ford said was true or not makes no difference to me. I think that was an interview that he failed.
Mm-hmm. So I just think based on his performance in that, and I wouldn't have bothered with that episode.
Right.
We would have kind of presented a different thing. So
yeah, we would have taken a different angle on that.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Now,
for sure.
If you were going through the interwebs, Karen, as you are prone to do, what episodes do you think people should start with to understand the crux of the show?
I think that the series episodes are the ones that really show what we do. I think it's really important to listen to the lighter ones like Scandals in the White House and Presidential Quirks to kind of get a good feel for our personalities. And then you'll get why I try to fit a Johnson joke in as much as possible. So, you know.
You love a Johnson joke.
I do. A good Johnson joke is just never the wrong choice to make. But I think that, you know, it's important to go to those lighter ones to kind of understand who we are and the way we joke with one another. We've had a couple of people join the page and then leave the page and say that either I was mean to you or you were mean to me. And it's kind of funny because if anyone has listened all the way through or to some of those lighter episodes, they understand the banter and the respect that we actually have for one another. But I think to get the crux of the show, some of our fact-finding things, the things where we were on a journey to teach ourselves and sharing that with you, I think those are the ones that really show the crux of the show.
I think, to me, the essence of the show, if you were just going to listen to one and try to get the essence of it, would be the cable news show.
Okay.
It'd be
Why?
The cable news. Because it reminds you that for all the hysteria, for all the things that they like to report, for of two of the three stations at least, Trump is the worst thing that's ever happened to America. And they are making money hand over fist. I mean, Donald Trump is the best thing that happened to cable news in forever. And as you are watching cable news, remember that. The reason right. that Donald Trump is yeah. all over cable news is because he is good for ratings. Mm-hmm. And ratings yeah. mean money. So Donald Trump, Donald Trump is money. He's money in the bank right. for cable news.
Right. Everything is marketing. We just need to remember that.
Right.
Yeah. So this is, I think, kind of what we've learned overall, right? First of all, we've definitely had some adventures. Yes. Like you recording in your car when you were on vacation. Remember when you couldn't find internet and you would drive?
I could not get a cell phone signal. I had to drive like 5 miles to get a cell phone signal. I have a laptop in my, my lap and my headphones on and my microphone pins at the wheel. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was like the Verizon guy. Can you hear me now, Karen? Can you hear right. me now?
At one time, you were recording on vacation and got stopped by a police officer, right? Asking what you were doing or something.
Yeah, that happened to me too.
Right. And then there's all the adventures of, or misadventures when we're...
That story, I was on my way to Chicago and we had decided, because I was going to be short on time, we would read the script mm-hmm. because we always go over the notes and then record it the next day. So I went out to the van or the car, not the van, but the car and pulled into an empty place where I could talk to you. And mm-hmm. I had the next thing I know, I have two policemen at my window
I remember
saying, what are you doing? And I was like, Karen, can you hold on? I have policemen here.
Your voice immediately got like tense because you tense up around police officers.
Absolutely. And the crazy thing was, the craziest thing about that, they asked me what I was doing and I told them and they were like, oh, okay, somebody called because you look suspicious. And I've been around police long enough to know don't make any quick sudden movements. And I said, I'm going to reach for my wallet. I'll get my ID. And the guy just said, oh, don't worry about it. And went on his way.
Yeah, you were acting as though you were about to be. Yeah, it was pretty funny because you got pretty nervous, but everything was fine. And I guess if we're talking about misadventures, we also have to discuss all the times that we almost finished an entire episode and I went, oh, I forgot to hit record. Right?
Yeah, that is going to be. I have actual audio of myself that I'm going to put inside the show of you doing that. So
no, don't. It was always, I mean, you have the ability to use a certain cuss word in every part of speech. And I think the times that I did that, I heard this one particular word used in every part of speech several
times. Yeah, I could use it as a noun, adjective, verb, pronoun.
Yep, you can make it a complete sentence out of that word.
And you have driven me to that a number of times, especially when I have given you data on something and you've said, have you cross-checked this? And I will say yes. And you'll say, where did you cross-check it? And, you know, I'm terrible for keeping sources. So then I would have to go back and find it again.
Right, because I'm that. Because
you're
good
that
thing.
Person.
Well, that's what we do. People like sources. So
I don't like sources. I just believe what people tell
stuff.
Me. It is. I do
you make
up
things.
Stuff.
I mean, and people believe you. You just make up facts. On your other podcast, I honestly think there are people who believe some of the stories that you have told about your life and stuff that is just not true at all.
No, they couldn't be true from anybody's life. And actually, my son was talking about the show and he said, he was talking about you and the research you did. And he said, I really love the way she sources when she gives me, you know, she tells me something that she tells me where she's getting that data from. And he said, because you just make stuff up. He was talking about me and I was like, well, yeah, but I'm usually close. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's been really fun. I think watching the show like evolve into what it's kind of meant to, what it's meant to be.
Well, and can I just interrupt and jump in here? Mm-hmm. What the show was never meant to be was mm-hmm. a conservative and a liberal arguing and yelling at each other.
Or debating.
Yeah, we right. do plenty mm-hmm. of that before we ever get on the air. But yeah. call each other names and scream. We do all the things we tell our listeners not to
well,
do.
Well, you do, Chuck.
Oh, you've hung up on me before.
So. I've hung up on you a couple of times, yes. But I don't yes. yell.
No, you just hang up on me. As I'm in the middle of one of my great, great rants on the injustices of the world. And you just either set the phone down or you hang up and take another call. And I'm still going on.
Well, because you're not listening to me, but that's okay. Go ahead.
But I'm sorry. Go ahead. You were saying it was fun to watch the show evolve into what it was meant to be.
Right. It was never meant to be a debate show. Exactly what you said. We do all that off the air because, I mean, the point was to figure out where we like where we converged. That was the beginning point. But the show really kind of took on a life of its own. And it went from looking for common ground to instead looking through history to agree on a common set of facts. And that's a whole different thing. It, you know, to find kind of those things that are concrete facts and then how we fractured off into where we're at. That's a different, it's a different thing to go back in history and find that common set of facts and go, okay, let's start there again.
It really is. And sometimes I become very frustrated because I hear people say, we can find common ground. We can find, no matter where you're at, you can find, well, of course we can find common ground. Who wants to see the wildfires in California? Oh, look, right. Both sides agree. That's common ground. Who wants an Ebola outbreak throughout the entire mm-hmm. country? Nobody. Okay, that's common ground. Common ground's right. easy. A mm-hmm. common set of facts is difficult.
Right. Right. Because you have to usually check your own bias at the door and go back pretty far to see where this started from and then how you got to where you are now.
And you can't hide from facts. I mean, facts are facts, and you can't hide from them.
And also, we have a really lovely Facebook group, and I've learned a lot from them. I think you have too, haven't you? I mean, it's kind of been...
I have, and
that's been a big part of our journey.
Consider myself a liberal. We have people that are far more liberal than me mm-hmm. That I have learned from, I'm sorry. And the conservative people on the group, mm-hmm. are people that I, what I found is nobody, everybody has a label, mm-hmm. but their views are never consistent. They may be
right.
liberal or leftist on 80% of the things they believe mm-hmm. and conservative on the other 20%.
Right. Well, I mean, we've learned that they're nuanced thinkers. And I know for myself, I've learned to just listen and consider what someone else's perspective is in good faith, rather than just listening in order to respond. You know, I've heard you use that term a lot, Chuck, in good faith. And it's so true. I mean, we've been entering conversations as a society with one another that are not in good faith. We enter into conversations with the whole goal is to convince the other person that we're right. And I think that this show and our Facebook group has really taught me to not do that, to have conversations in good faith and not just listening in order to respond. And I usually don't end up agreeing with an opposing view, but I found that there's a lot more value in those opposing views than I ever acknowledged before. So I know that changing my perspective on things or admitting I was wrong isn't easy for me at all. I don't like it, but I am truly thankful for the challenge and the refinement.
Well, I think what I learned is to quit reacting, not to listen to that inner voice that 55 years has ingrained in me, to open my mind. I told you that I learned something very important from one of my boys, and he's only 23 years old. And he was talking about people with differing views. And he said, you know, what he wants to do when he talks to people with completely different views is see the roadmap that they took to arrive at that point of view. And when he's having a discussion, he's not, when I would have a discussion with someone who, and you know this because we've had those discussions, you're halfway into your point and I am trying to think how I'm going to show you you're wrong. And that's one thing I've tried to change. And what I try to do now is follow the roadmap of how they came to that conclusion, how they came to that point of view. I actually learned that from him. And he said, you know, if someone sits and they want to talk about abortion, they have a completely different view of it than I do. They want to talk about the budget or spending, and they have a completely different view than I do. I want to learn how they arrived at that roadmap, what roadmap they use to get to that point of view. And in learning that, maybe I can learn something myself. And I think that was a very important thing. And I think that he put into words something I was trying to do, something I was evolving into with the podcast, is just, what is your roadmap for having that belief? Tell me what it is.
How did we get there?
And I don't want to prove you wrong. I want to learn something from you.
Right.
Enter into a conversation not wanting to prove somebody wrong. Stand your ground. Make your points. You don't have to change your mind. But just try to learn something from someone.
Right. Yeah. That's only going to make you better. So we have some big upcoming news that we want to share with everybody. We're going to end the year with that.
Yes.
We have two really big announcements. The first is that in the next couple of months, we will no longer be Rants and Reason. We are going to be re-releasing the show under a new name. And that new name is, Context and Clarity, which is still alliteration, which makes me very happy.
You are, yes, you are all about alliteration.
And thank you to Chuck's son, Tanner, for helping us come up with this. We were having a discussion about the best way to advertise the show. And he said, what your show does is really, you know, it provides a lot of context and provides a lot of clarity. And I was like context and clarity? And he was like, yeah. So I really, really appreciate his help with that, too. We felt that Rants and Reason, although, you know, that was kind of what we intended to do at the beginning, the title doesn't really fit where we ended up. Context and clarity fits what we're trying to do. We are also trying to make adjustments to our podcast catalog and redo a few of the episodes. So in about a month or so, we'll let everybody know, and it may be worth it to check out some of the older episodes, especially some of the first ones, because we probably will be changing them up quite a bit. So,
yeah, nothing will change if you're subscribed. Our RSS feed will stay the same. Our Facebook page will redirect you to the other one, but
Our logo is going to change a little, but we just wanted to change the name because I think that people are sick of ranting. They're sick of anger, and the name tends to turn some people off, don't you think?
Yeah, Tanner Tanner listens to the show and he likes the show, and he was talking about it, and he said, you know, the problem is that you are lumped in with kind of these political debate shows that kind of wear people out. There's a fatigue. Mm-hmm. And I don't think, and again, from an advertising and marketing standpoint, your title matches your show.
Right.
So you should try something that fits better. We're basically going to be Coke Zero.
I think it's going to be fun. So we're looking forward to being context and clarity. So get used to that, everybody.
Yes, and we have to, our original logo came from Logan. He modified the logo a little bit for context and clarity. So it will still be very similar. It'll still have the same look.
Right.
So
we're looking forward to
other news, as we have had just literally hundreds of hours of conversation throughout the year.
We're so excited about this, by the way.
Yes. Okay. Is that we found something that we are both fascinated with. And that, it's not like this one, which requires people to work and search for the truth and, you know, challenge right. your belief system. This one is going to kind of be like, you know, I know that you love
fun.
To tell those fun stories of people, you know, what do you call them? Unlikely friend stories. Yes. I know you love to tell a good story, Karen. And the thing that we found that we both share a complete fascination with is spies.
Spies are cool.
Spies are fascinating people. They're just fascinating people. They are so interesting.
Yes. So I'm teaching a class on spies over where I teach. And I was talking to Chuck about it. And as I was telling him about some of these spies, we got to talking about all these other ones. And we realized, you know, we'd been talking about doing another podcast that was a little bit more fun and not so news driven, and where we could do some storytelling. And then we just realized that we wanted to tell the stories of spies. So.
And it will be called Spy Stories. And again, I have to thank Logan because he did our logo for us, and Karen came up with
and
the
Allie.
Idea.
And Logan Allie. And Allie.
Yeah. So we hope to have that released. What would you say? Maybe mid-February, Karen?
That's what our goal is. Well, no, we should be able to have, because we've got a few episodes worked on. I think we should be able to launch mid-January.
I'm sorry, mid-January. I meant mid-January.
Yeah, February is when we're going to be probably at our 1 year mark, is where we're going to switch to context and clarity officially. But I think that we're going to have spies out in the next couple of weeks. And I'm just going to say, y'all, the song that we picked out is just fantastic. So be prepared.
It's pretty good. So we hope you're going to join us there. And really, for tonight, that is all we have to say about that.
Thanks for sticking with us, and have a happy, happy new year.
Have a great new year, everyone. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.